The following content has been provided by New St. Andrews College in Moscow, Idaho. For more information, visit us online at www.nsa.edu.
Hear the world calling, but some don't listen. They're only trying to drag you back into prison, that's right.
Welcome back to What Have You. This is Rachel Jankovic.
I'm Becca Merkel.
And here we are, sitting in the sunshine of Idaho, unbelievably acting like spring right now.
It's been like the wettest, soggiest, most bleary spring yet.
And today, you've been with us through it. We've been commenting every time on it.
My boys play lacrosse and we've basically had no games. It's like it keeps getting canceled because the fields are rained out.
Too muddy to walk on.
Anyway, today we have a doubleheader, junior high then high school, which means the fields can be walked upon.
Yeah, we go to the exciting. So we had junior high track meet yesterday, and I love the track meets, but the thing that it makes me feel is simultaneously much younger than I am, and then on the other hand much older than I am.
Do you love the track meets?
I love track meets.
I hate a track meet.
Yeah, no, but you didn't do track and I did, so there's something about it.
No, I like the races. What I dislike is the ridiculous disorganization that happens.
Actually, there have been some really well-organized runs this year,
impressed. Guys, we could do better. It's like everybody runs 100, and then they start wandering around for 45 minutes calling people.
They've been doing the ones where they have, like, the guy with the bullhorn lining up all the heats of the 100, so they actually have, like, 6 races of the 100 all lined up at one time.
I know, but they never get cracking. It's always like, here.
They've been doing good. They've been doing good.
Do a bunch of fake starts over and over and over.
I have some kids who are not old enough for track who were, like, intoxicated by the thought of track, so they just run around on the infield with their eyes sparkling wildly the whole time. They, like, pretend they're having races.
On the infield? Yeah. Well, they told us we weren't allowed to go across there.
We go across there. So I don't, like, just let them loose for the day, but we do funny. Go on the infield.
People. Maybe this was the high school track meet. They were
probably.
Like,
we would not
away
do that.
Stay away from the track and the field.
Well, that's because of discus and stuff, but they were not, it was not happening.
Also, I think the other thing is, they were like, please, parents, stay in the stands. Let the coaches be the coaches. We don't need you all over the field coaching everyone in renegade fashion.
That's funny. But that's high school. That's a different scene.
Yeah, we're in
junior high. It's like nobody knows.
A little bit more.
It's pretty cash.
Yeah.
The funny part about it is that made out of running a 400, which was a race that I mostly ran. I was a 400 runner.
Which is kind of the killer race, really.
But it is up there with the 800 and the hurdles. It's up there. But it's like too long to actually just sprint the whole thing, but it is too
short to jog.
Short to slow down. So basically you end up living in that world.
Yeah.
And you look like you died somewhere around the 300. And then that last, like when you're waiting at the finish line, it's like everybody looks like they're just going out of business the whole way. And it feels like that. It's horrible.
And they are going out of business.
I always remember that last 100, when we're practicing it, or I remember our coach, Gwen Spencer in high school, like you round the corner. And you're like, I'm down to the last. It's just a straightaway. But I remember just staring at her feet, and they would not get bigger. Like, you are running as fast as you can, as hard as you can, and you never are getting closer to the person.
I think that's a metaphor for my housekeeping.
Yeah, maybe. But who? What
you
is
run,
Gwen
you
Spencer?
Run,
what
you
is
run. Gwen? You keep thinking that organization is
it makes
somewhere,
it makes me
somewhere to
feel,
be found.
It makes me feel, though, like I go to the track meet, and I'm like, oh, I'll just run a 400 with you to show you how to pace yourself or what. And I'm like, what am I thinking? Like if I tried to run a 400 right now, what would it be? 6 minutes? I mean, I don't know, but I'm pretty curious. Like I feel like we have to go to the track and try. Mm. Now I think I'll probably die after like,
you're going to get back
a 100
back in your high school track groove.
No, but I just start feeling like I need to know if I can run a 400 still. Oh. There's something about that.
You know what? I don't need to know that because I know that it would be dismal.
It would be pretty bad for me, too. I would be surprised if I could really.
I would not surprise myself with any good news.
I think I don't think I would get good news either. There's just some part of me that feels like I need to know. It's like a rock that has to be flipped over. We should say, for the listeners, because we left everyone hanging with the brain surgery.
Yeah, coming, we did.
That he made it through his brain surgery
yesterday.
And the tumor was successfully removed. But it was really, the surgeon who's been doing it for a long time said it was, I think he's been doing it for like 20 years, right?
He's done like 1,300 of these.
Yeah, and he said it was one of the worst ones that he has done. So we were all really glad when he got moved to recovery because it was a solid like hour and something longer than they thought it would take.
Yeah, it was quite a bit longer.
So that last little stretch was a little bit long.
The hour was long.
It was a little long.
It was long.
And I was like, they said 1240, right? So why is it 1:30? What's happening? Like, how come we have not heard? So
I know. And I kept looking at my phone. And then I had a bunch of tedious other things happening in that hour because...
Not tedious. Oh. Flash bang. Flash bang overboard.
Yeah, there was a flash bang overboard that was
tedious
happening.
Is like long, slow labor.
But it was tedious because you kept waiting for the news from...
Yeah, it was
like,
weirdly...
Just waiting, like, we were waiting for the text, And meanwhile, I teach every day, and yesterday was the, we talked about last week, I was making the dress for my daughter's formal thing. Well, the seniors and the juniors, they go off and do a formal dinner, and I was still not done yesterday with her dress, and they left at 2. But see, I teach, and I teach those classes. And they got let out. I got to head home because I was done teaching. It was Nate's surgery, so I was just kind of really relieved that I wasn't trying to teach and think about stuff. But I had to go home, and I had to finish her dress. Well, skirt, anyway. So I had to finish it. So I went home. I finished teaching at like 10:15, which is much earlier than I'm normally done. So I ran home. I knew that they had to be there at 2 o'clock. At 12:30... I tell my husband, like, you need to pray, like, hard, because this is not cool. I'm on the phone with him. I'm like, you've got
to pray. Get on your knees
to pray
at your office and pray
doing,
for the formal
gown.
Yes, now.
I was doing this patterned lining on the inside of the skirt, and I did it a little bit asymmetrical, so the front is just a little bit up so you could see the lining in the back.
High-low thing.
And, which is funny I did that, because I usually despise high-low, but anyway, I thought it would be cute. So... I am still cutting it out, and plus I'm making it up as I go along, so I'm having to like really make sure it's going to fit and it's going to go in nicely and everything. 12:30, I'm still cutting it out, and she has to be dressed and at the place at 2 o'clock. So
now we're
plus
in
it's like
formal gown, not
formal
ready
gown
slash brain
panic
surgery
attack.
Going
plus,
over time.
Why are we not hearing yet about Nate? So it and then at 12:40. Okay, so this is 12:30. I'm telling my husband, pray harder. And at 12:40, I get a text from my daughter, who is a sophomore. He's like, Mom, you know we have class, right? And I was like, what? And I had another class I was supposed to teach in the afternoon. And just flat forgot. Like, I don't know what happened.
Well,
it was a total
blank. You're sending
blank.
Out prayer chains
and
for
so
your...
And so how to make everything a bazillion times worse is, like, now I'm not at school, and I'm supposed to be at school, and what on earth is happening? Plus, I think it was just mentally, because the seniors and juniors were dismissed early, I just had it in my head
anyways,
that, like,
yeah.
Oh, the students got dismissed. I totally forgot the sophomores weren't. So anyhow... Now I'm at home with an unfinished dress, and I'm supposed to be at class, and so I called Ben, and he, like the saint that he is, bless the man, he went running up and subbed for me in the sophomore rhetoric class so that I, anyway, but then it's like the whirly sewing for an hour, still not hearing about Nate.
Yeah, it was not good.
Oh, my word. I finished that stupid thing at 1:40. They had to be there at 2, and I think we got texted at about, like, 1:40 that he had just the surgery was just complete.
Just
so there were multiple
recovery.
Levels of relief that all converged at 1:40.
I had
yesterday
I started making bread. Well, actually I started making bread the night before, but I started, you know, I made the leaven and then I mixed the dough for four loaves yesterday. And then Luke stayed home during the surgery. He worked at home and whatever. And then he's like, let's go out to Deary, to this place that we like, the Pie Safe. He's like, let's just drive, you know. But I couldn't leave the bread dough because it has to be turned every 30 minutes. Like, you have to, you know, for the first 3 hours. So, packed it with us. First, driving to a bakery in Derry with two bins of bread dough fermenting. I brought it on the bulk ferment us. It was really happy bread. It must have liked it. It was like that special.
You take your bread out on a trot.
The special touch is, you know, to bring it with you in the car. And it was a little silly because it's a pretty wet dough. So I usually run my hand under the faucet before I turn it, so you get your hand wet so it doesn't stick.
Yeah, right.
And I there was like one moment where I almost brought a pitcher full of water to like rinse my hand, and then I felt like that was going too far. So I left that, but instead we had to go into the bakery. I had to go wash the dough off of my hand. Like my hand all doughy.
It's a little extra to do it in a bakery. Like, we've come to your bakery.
We came to your bakery, but don't worry.
I'm bringing my own bread.
Don't worry. We're in the bulk fermentation process in the Suburban.
That's what, really funny.
And then after we were done in there, we got coffee and the boys had a pastry, and then I went out. It was like, turned it in the car while they went to the park.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was pretty silly.
Oh, my word. Yeah, and I was flat worn out by the end of that afternoon yesterday. It was a lot of resources needed yesterday.
I felt like I was really chill all day. Like, I was doing great. Like, I was steady.
I was decently chill.
No, I felt like I was not strong. It wasn't like I was battling with a lot of anxiety. I was obviously praying a lot for them. Right. And really it was on my heart and on my mind, but I was not being, felt like not, I was not being radically emotional or anything. You know, it was just like, it was all good. And still, when I got the text that he was moved to recovery, I burst into just stupid tears. Like now I'm just crying like a dork. Like, now that he's out of surgery. It's like, apparently there was a lot of ambient stress going on that I was not looking straight at. So like, I feel like I didn't feel tense or straight. You know, like, I was just waiting.
Yeah. I was, meanwhile, in a frenzy trying to help my daughter with her hair and make sure the dress was fine, and then we get the text that he'd just been moved to recovery.
Right.
And I was like, oh my goodness, I think I'm going to cry. Oh my word. But I kind of did.
It was, and now they're in the phase where it's like there's not really much turnaround. I was really feeling for Heather last night because I'm here, not there. And obviously he's our brother, but not our husband. And it's like, so I was feeling like she was the same way, except for it turned around so quickly from being the adrenaline of making it through the surgery to being now all the really hard part starts.
I think this is hard.
This is the part that's much harder than the surgery. The surgery is like, other people are doing that, and we're really thankful that it went well and his face is not paralyzed.
Oh, so
which is a
wonderful.
Real mercy. And it sounded like the surgeon, that's what the surgeon was happy about because of the way it was entangled with the facial nerve. It sounded like he said he was happy with how it ended, but that it was really gnarly.
Yeah.
I think he was pleasantly surprised that he did not have his face paralyzed. It sounded like it was like, yay, good news.
Lots of prayers.
But still there's lots to pray for about him, like, because he's been really nauseous because of the... Partly probably because of the anesthesia and everything, and
pain meds and
your brain being inflamed, but partly because they cut the balance nerve. So part of it is having to relearn balance and feeling like he said this is the bull I have to ride. I think it probably really feels like riding a bull. I think it feels like being horribly seasick or something. You know, like, it's a weird thing to have to work through.
So. But I'm so happy we're on the other side of the surgery. That's wonderful.
Yes.
And how about that, other than the surgery, what are you... Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about.
Talk about it.
This is me talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm bothered by.
Brace myself.
Yeah. This is a thing that peeves me. And I feel like I see this a lot in a lot of places on social media from Christians. And I feel like we ought to know better. And that is acting like we have to be so cautious about telling women that they are in sin about anything. that we have to like tiptoe and we have to be delicate.
No, if we're going to say anything about
sin. Pastors must be cautious because they are men.
I think that if we're going to say anything about women's sin, it has to be so deeply entangled in the mauve fog that no one could identify it.
Yes.
Like, I feel like it has to be so elusive.
Kind of like, don't you know that there are women everywhere who struggle with feeling whatever? And here's the thing. This is what I am bothered about. I am obviously not a feminist. And feminists, you know, fuss about wanting an equal wage and demanding respect for this and respect for that. And I'm not on board with that. But the one thing
you're like, equality and rebukes. What I want is equality and rebukes.
You know, the apostles and the authors of the New Testament at least had enough respect for women that they thought they could
hit them between the eyes.
That they could be big kids and be treated like they could be Christians too. And I just feel like, what is it with acting like women are such tender flowers that we cannot bring up a female sin without qualifying ourselves into the dirt? And it just really bugs me. Because it's like, do we think women are rational creatures who can actually be treated as if we're rational creatures and told when we're out of line and that we should be able to handle that, assess it,
so there's
and
something
change
that
our course?
This might sound like a detour, but I think it's relevant. There's something that we have one particular child. We have a number of children, but we have one that this has come up with occasionally, which is, and I think it's a uniquely feminine temptation. So I don't know. I'm just bringing this up because what it is that weird little chain of things in your brain that says, I want this and such. I would like to paint my nails.
Okay.
And it's like, I'll ask if I can paint my nails. If mom loves me, she'll say yes to painting my nails.
Right.
And then when you say no, it's like taking that as a really personal hurt. And we've talked a lot.
Here comes Shadrach.
Here comes Shad. You don't know? Okay.
I don't know where the button that turns it on. The button that turns it on.
Okay. I'll handle it. I'll be right in. So, back to this. So, basically, if you set up a little chain of things that is like, this would mean love. They're not doing this.
Right.
Therefore, they don't love me. And we have talked a lot about this, and she gets it. She's working on it. You know, it's like, whatever. It says that you have to learn to hear love the way people express it. Like,
sure.
You can't, and women are bad at this. Your husband could be saying, I love you. You're beautiful. I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, if he loved me, he would take me out to dinner sometime.
Oh my word.
And he's like, I love you. And I was like, psha, you didn't take me out to dinner.
One time talked to a woman who was saying that her husband never expressed love. But as we pursued it further, we find out that he frequently bought her surprise gifts, left them on her pillow at night, like chocolate, etc. And then she's like, but if he really knew me, then he would know I don't appreciate that.
I don't care.
And so he should know that that doesn't actually bless me.
And one of the weirdest things about that is how backwards that is, because basically what she's saying is, if he knew me, then he would express this differently. And it's like, yeah, and if you cared to know him, you would listen to what he's saying.
Yes.
Like, you would care to hear that this was an effort that he was making.
Yeah.
And I think the reason I was bringing that up is that as a culture, we have started saying that pastors loving women
means
has to look this particular way. And it would never mean, they would never tell a woman that anything in the marriage is her fault. They would never tell a woman that she ought not to talk to her husband that way.
Right.
They would never tell a woman
that she ought not to dress that way.
Right, because they're saying that would not be love, because that would make her feel judged. But the reality is a woman who's really walking with God actually wants rebuke,
wants to get better, wants to hear.
Like, even if it's hard, it's like, no discipline is pleasant at the time. It's it's not pleasant, but it's pleasant that you're getting things right and that you're moving along.
The thing that bothers me is I've seen some people saying, you know, pastors are men, so they have to be especially careful about not, you know, thinking they understand women too much, which basically means, do you not think women deserve to have a pastor? Like, women are like, do we have to stay in the outer court where we don't get pastored? Because
I have a weird question that I should probably have researched before this moment. Aren't boy sheep, aren't they rams? Are they?
And now for something completely different. Are boy sheep rams? Well, I think rams are boy sheep.
I know, but like when you see a whole flock of sheep.
Like what's the feminine version of a ram? Is that what you're asking?
No, no, I'm actually the sheep are girls a lot of the time. This is what I was going to say, is that no good shepherd doesn't care about the females of the flock, because that's the whole inheritance. And I'm saying, like, you think cows, they really keep the bulls at a minimum, and in the, like, it's not the main work of shepherding. But then I just suddenly was wondering, you know, like, I know rams are boy sheep, but do they separate the boys from the girls and sheep?
I have no idea.
Man, we should check this out. My question is,
the metaphor works anyways.
My point is that a pastor is a shepherd, and it is hardly not his concern. This sounds really, I'm not trying to be devious sounding here, but it is like, it's hardly irrelevant how the females in the flock are doing. That's the whole point of being a shepherd.
Crucial.
Yes, and I'm saying, not just because they're 50% of, they're not just 50% of the, just a second, but thanks. They're not just 50% of the flock currently, they're 100% of the future flock.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, like, the women, how the women are doing has everything to do with how the future's coming.
Yeah. That's what I remember Dad saying one time to a guy who was so hardcore homeschool, like, that's the only way, but also don't educate your daughters because they only need to know how to cook and clean and have babies. And I remember Dad pointing out the real error in that whole system. One of the many errors, but one of them being, who do you think is going to homeschool your grandsons?
this idea of don't bother to teach the women anything.
And he said, the level to which you educate your daughters is the level to which you want your grandsons to be educated.
Yeah, you don't,
and the
you
thing
don't
is, that's
aim
so
low.
True. With
don't
the women
aim low
in the
with
church,
your girls.
Like, if you just let women, like, sink in the weird little emotional slough of despond because you can't help them out because that might not be sensitive enough.
Well, like, who do you want? Like, the way scripture talks about
ship.
My son, like, listen to the law of your mother. And you think, like, do you think of that woman, the woman who's laying down the law for the king? You know what I mean? Who's like, this is my law. Like, this is, and it's wise. Not only is this what I'm telling you, but it's wise. And it's like, do you think that that woman was the kind of woman who couldn't take rebuke, couldn't take hearing something that was like, what you're doing is not honoring God.
Right.
You think
you need to change course.
You think, do you see her being like,
how dare he?
This hurts my feelings.
How dare he speak to me?
I feel like now people think that I may have had a sin sometime.
Well,
you're like, well, yeah.
But it just, I think that honestly, part of the evangelical world acts as if women don't sin. Or if they do sin, we must leave them in it because to pull them out would be unkind or something. And I think, to be honest, I think it's really sometimes driven by fear.
Oh, I think it's definitely fear.
Of how the women
will
respond.
I think it's not that women are so weak. It's that they have become incredibly manipulative.
Well, they have learned to...
Yes.
The thing is, I think we all know how tears can be weaponized. I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, we know about that. And I think that many of these social media / blog posts are basically taking the weaponization of tears and turning it into an actual argument and trying to pretend like it's valid and trying to act like...
Well, sometimes it's just like the presence of the tear is enough to make us realize we shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
But like sometimes I've been rebuked for things that I ended up thinking was not... Like that you had to work through because the rebuke stung and because you're like... And there have been times both that I've been rebuked, worked my way through it, and thought, yes, actually, that is a problem. You know, like, and I need to change that. Or sometimes you don't. Sometimes you work through it and you're like, actually, that was just a random...
Right.
I actually don't feel like
this
is a problem.
Let's say that you were rebuked And the person rebuking you was wrong, right? They were just genuinely wrong. Now, the thing is...
Usually wrong about your motives.
Are you a strong enough human that you can deal with another person being wrong about you?
It's not just being a strong enough human. It's recognizing that even if a random person gives me some feedback that was wrong or misjudged me, that it's still profitable for me
to have to hear it,
to work through it, to have that conversation with God about, do I need to feel guilty about this or do I not? Like, I was rebuked once, really hardcore by someone in a way that really stressed me out because I was young and it was all kinds of things. And I confronted someone on fornicating. And I was angry with someone for fornicating because, as it turned out, I was angry with myself because I was young and I was making too many allowances. I was like, just because they don't do things the way we do things doesn't mean they're living in rank sin. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And it was this girl who was giving me hundreds of hints. Now I would have confronted her on fornicating about a year before I did this time. There was extenuating circumstances, but now I would have no doubt from the get-go.
Right.
Then I was young and I was like being like, well,
kind of naive. Yeah.
Just because he comes over to give her back rubs doesn't mean they're sleeping together, you know? And you're like, now I would have just been like, right off the bat. Instead, I treasured up all of these weird red flags in my heart until finally I was like, what? Are you sleeping with him? Anyways, turned out they were struggling with that. I was like, no. Like, it was just made me so mad. Anyways, when I said my piece about that, got a follow-up later. Follow-up rebuke. Both from the person... the fornicator herself, and also from a friend of hers, like from both of them. And both of them just flipped out mad at me. And like, you had no right. Like, you had no right. Like, nobody asked you to keep me accountable.
You're like, well, except God.
Yeah, but that this was the thing, is that I felt horribly guilty just because of the language that they were using. Like, just because it was like, how dare you? You couldn't have done this. Like, I was just the situation of being rebuked and confronted like that was heavy from older women. You know what I mean? Like it was heavy. And I cried, I think, about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, but I couldn't back down because I knew that I was right and I knew that they were wrong. And I knew that I said, you did too ask me to keep you accountable when you told me all those things that made it clear that you were not,
and
you know,
like. And I feel like part of the story, for people who didn't hear it, it was actually some pretty, it wasn't just like an average little person who was struggling with it. It was somebody who had a ministry. No,
it was pretty, it was high-handed. It was high-handed.
It was very high-handed.
Yes.
In the abstinence ministry, someone who travels.
No, it was just,
it was somebody whose abstinence was basically their party platform that you found out was doing this. So it wasn't, there was more of a...
Yeah, well, it was involved, yeah, it was which more is, which elaborate. Explains,
I'm just saying, because you said you were angry about it.
Angry because I felt like it was uncovering the sin in the camp, like where you're like, are you joking me? Like, in the middle, like, are you serious about this?
Right.
Like, you didn't think that this was important information. Like, you thought that this didn't matter. You know, it was bad. Anyways, but the point is that being rebuked by a Christian who was out of line, misjudging my motives, totally wrong anyways. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was nothing about what they did. Them rebuking me was completely unfounded in the sense of, like, and it was hard on me, and it took me a long time to process it. It was hard to process it, but I knew I couldn't apologize. And it was a really formative spiritual experience for me. Right. And so you think, like, even though I was being really wronged, it wasn't like I wouldn't go back and undo that at all. Yeah. Like, I was so thankful for it. In retrospect, I was thankful for it at the time when I realized, like, no, I actually am convicted of this, like, what I'm standing up for. I'm not going to apologize to you for saying you shouldn't have done that.
Right.
Like, you shouldn't have. God hates it. I still hate it, too. We all hate it together. It was one of the few times that I got so annoyed about something. Like, I'm not a real crier. And here I am talking twice in one episode about crying. I'm not a big crier. But that was one time that I went from that interaction that was fairly explosive when it happened. Yeah. You know what I mean? It turned into a... It's not like I was screaming. I cared a lot. Like, I was really like, I can't even believe it. This is what we're dealing with here. Mm-hmm. And I went straight from there to Dad's office because I was just like, I just have to talk to Dad about this. And I walked into his office and just burst into tears. Like, I was just so angry. I don't think I have ever cried of anger like that. Like, I was just like, and it was one of those things where it was like the circle within the circle of angers, because I was angry at myself for taking that long to recognize that all of these weird little threads of things that were, you know, like all of these things were constantly coming. She was telling me all these things. And it didn't make sense. And I just was trying to, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt for like a year. I mean, it was too long. And then by the time I realized, and then I just felt like an idiot. You know, it was like, and then I had to do that thing. It's an awkward thing to ask someone. It's an awkward thing to then follow up the rebuke on. Went to Dad's office and just was like, Dad was like, whoa, like I still remember his face as he turned around his desk. Like, he is like, what on earth is happening? Because I'm not that way. Anyways, barreling into his office.
I'm crying like, at
no, him. Dad! That was when I was in college. My word. It was a college.
No, but I just think the thing is, though, is so that's an example of you being rebuked wrongly. But I
also hurt her. I rebuked her. Yeah. And more than that, I mean, I rebuked her and I was like, and I'm also, not only am I keeping you accountable, if you don't fix this right now, I'm bringing in a next wave of accountability. I'm going to spread the news further about what you're struggling with. But my point is, maybe I didn't do that perfectly, but I did it honestly. I did it before God the way I should have. And it is like, there's no, she was in sin, and there's no, like...
And it was a high-handed kind of sin.
Yes, but even if it hadn't been that, I would still be obligated to say something. Yes. My point is that a Christian rebuking you for open sin is something that...
Yeah, and like, let's say that they're wrong. I mean, I've been rebuked before for wearing pants, and I don't think that I needed to... Mm. I don't think I needed to be rebuked for that. Like,
listeners, you didn't know. No. Becca wears pants sometimes.
I wear pants upon occasion, and this person thought that I ought never to wear pants because it was, you know, a concession to the feminists or something. And I was rebuked for that, and I thought that it was bonkers. But it's like...
But you still had to think through an argument about why you think it's legit to wear pants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if I had, like, hyperventilated and done the, like, how dare you? Do you not know how much you hurt me? Do you not know that you cannot talk to women that way? Because we will... I just think the New Testament is full of instructions to the women. This is how you ought to behave. This is how you ought not to behave. They didn't act as if the women needed to be danced around. And
no. And this is something that I have said before, probably not on the podcast, though, is that, like, people get offended by Paul saying things like, wives, submit to your husbands. And they're like, you know, but when you're dealing with women who have, like, a bad association with some
they have
word,
traumatic histories
or they have
with
things.
Men.
And I should say, I'm just going to put it out there, I'm very sympathetic to people who have traumatic histories. I have a number of friends who have abuse or rape in their past or have been, like, I know a lot of people individually that I have tried to walk through this with. So it's not something that I'm dismissing from but the thing about trying to say that we know better than the Bible does, we know better than Paul, we're going to deal with this
like
better.
We have to water this down because
I'm like,
he didn't
when
know
Paul
about
was
this.
Talking to the Ephesians, he's talking to, like, now people say, you don't understand, 1 in 4 women have been abused or been through things, and it's like, well, then I'm pretty sure there might
like
have been like 1 in 50 who had not been.
Oh, if you like, know anything
like so
about...
when Paul said wives submit to your husbands, he's talking about women who've been forced into temple prostitution. Go ahead and submit to that man who probably was raped. Do you know, like, they were all sexually abused and molested and
confused. You talk
about
the church at Corinth. You feel like there's probably not a soul in there that hadn't been
that doesn't have sexual baggage,
molested
or molesters.
I mean, the boys,
the man who was converted may have been using the temple prostitutes.
Well, and now we know that they were, because Paul had to keep telling him
right,
to stop.
You should lay off that going to the temple prostitutes thing. But my point is, when he says wives submit to your husbands,
and everybody could be talking out, like, to it's not sensitive enough.
For it's people, not sensitive enough to,
for people who have been
like,
hurt.
So what you were talking about is a saved sex worker with a saved sex worker user. Like, this is the merit, you know.
Or
like,
even the men, often the young boys were molested.
Like,
it's, the thing is, Paul was addressing a very, very rough crowd.
No, he was addressing people who have been through more than anyone we know.
And I feel like we actually are so far removed from the brutality of the first century world that it's
right.
It's ridiculous of us to act like we're the ones in the real trenches.
Like, we know how it's hard.
And people do have truly horrible stories, and yes, they do have baggage, but I think that to discount the teachings of the apostles because of that is...
What is that book is that Dad wrote that's like the tract? It's like clean water, broken bread. It is that the gospel of sin, forgiveness, repentance is the most basic life-sustaining sustenance. Like, it is powerful to save through the worst things.
Yeah, and it will save women.
Right, and when we start acting like you have to, like, hem and haw and narrow it down and not do it this way and don't do that, it's like what we're saying is that these perfect tools for salvation, forgiveness, restoration, repentance that God gave us, we're being too good to use. We're like, no, Lord, we don't want that. We want to come up with some obscure gadget that's kind of like the salad shooter that will that will heal your wounds. Like, instead of doing the broken body of Christ and his shed blood, we're like, no, you're wrong. What we need here is more of a smoothie.
But my thought is, I mean, I don't want to be rude, but if you cannot handle blog posts that ruffle your feathers, well, stay off the internet. Honestly, don't turn it on if you can't handle it.
Sometimes I can't handle it, and that's why I don't read them.
No, but I just mean, like, if you're the kind of woman who really can't hear any criticism because it sends you into a breathy
You should definitely
then stay off the internet. Like, read the Bible, but don't read any blogs. But whatever the case, don't act like
people... Well, if you're going to be in a constant dither about what some Christian said that you think might reflect badly on you, it's
I can't take it. It's like, be a big kid. Seriously.
Well, most importantly, Christians need to be able to talk about actual decisions, actual life, applied Christianity.
Yeah.
And if we act like this doesn't change anything, this doesn't do anything to our real lives, then it's just...
But the, like, running around shielding all the women from the criticism, I just, that
annoys me.
It
is actually, when you say shielding, it actually is reminding me of, you know, those in the colonial times because of the smallpox, how they would put wax on their faces. They would wax their faces to...
Well, that was to cover the scars.
To cover up the scars, right. But they would be all, and that's where the line to crack a smile
comes
from.
Yeah, don't crack a smile.
Don't crack a smile, because if you waxed all of your smallpox scars... And then you just got really tickled. You'd be like chunking wax off your face. It's a terrible thought, isn't it? But anyways, you know, what was you saying that about shielding it? How they had those little guards, the little heat shields for the fireplaces.
Yeah, little pointed screens.
To like be careful to not melt the wax off of your face.
So you can sit
by the fire but have a little shield. It's like Christians are thinking that that's what we want to do. We want to always be between our weird... Our weird whatever it is
basically
that we're doing
our
and
wounds.
The fire of but it's like the fire of the gospel of sin, of repentance. It was like we always want to keep our women in the shade from that and not actually ever just dealing with it, not ever letting this actually just be addressed. And it's sadder because in the illustration that I'm talking about, it was just wax and a fire. But if you're thinking about the fire as actually being something that would heal this wound, you're saying that the fire would actually fix the problem.
Right.
And you're like, no, I want the wax on here instead. So I have to always keep something between me and the fire.
And the thing that's usually being shielded is the wounds.
Right.
You know, it's like, no, my wounds over here mean that you can't bring the gospel to bear on it. And it's usually like in the details. But like people who do this would say, well, no, I'm all about the gospel. I'm just not about ever having it touched down in any kind of, you know, practical way. As soon as you make it practical, then I get mad because of my wounds. And it's like, I just think that women ought to have more respect for themselves. Like, you should be more of a...
And for other women.
And for other women. And not treat it as if women are too... Well, I don't know. It's like they're the little dainty group that can't handle the truth, so we'll just keep them off to the side and everyone has to tiptoe and use our quiet voices around them.
Right.
And I just think, like, come on, let's give women more respect than that. That mm-hmm. bothers me. All right.
I think it's clear that it actually bothers the both of us.
Yeah, I think it's...
Yeah. It's an annoyance. Well, maybe I have to come back to that topic because I think there's some future good in there.
I think there's a lot to be said.
You should
dig
around more and, like, practically
how you do it. Even just, like, how to handle it.
Right. Like, what how do you handle criticism or something, or what do you look for? How do you...
Yeah.
Like, I think one important thing is to not immediately respond by trying to build a defense.
Yeah.
But to know sometimes that you're saying that hurt, and I'm opening my heart up here to God to say, if this is actually pointing out something that I need to see, show it to me.
And if it's somebody telling me I shouldn't wear pants, it's like, you know what? I think you're wrong. But actually, I'm going to think through why you're wrong. And it's going to make me actually try and come up with a scriptural reason for what I'm doing. And let's say I did that and I realized he was right. Then I hope that I would be a big enough person to be like, you know what?
I saw that.
Turns out you had something there.
I looked at that and I discovered that I was in the wrong.
Anyway, we need to stop talking. Look at how late it is. Do you ever recommend?
Recommend
something.
What's the genre?
Recommend a product in your house that is better to buy vintage than new.
You know, because of back to my bread journey, my favorite bowl that I use all the time for bread or like dough rising or whatever is that vintage, the Tupperware fix and mix that we had, a yellow one growing
up. Yellow plastic, I remember that bread bowl with a little rubber lid.
Yeah.
But it was big. It was a great big bowl.
Big 26 cup. And I love it. And I had one that I found somewhere. I don't remember where. And then I found another one at a yard sale. I had a green one and I had a yellow one. And it was like, I couldn't get enough of those. It's what I use them all the time. And I have other bowls, but I use those all the time. They're the ones that I love.
Yeah.
And part of what I love about them is because they're lightweight, you feel very connected to the bread because you can hold it and turn it easily. Like, you feel like you can scrape the sides. It just works really well. Sure. I work well with it. I like it. It's my favorite. Plus, plastic or ceramic's okay, but for bread rising, it was good anyways, instead of metal.
Right.
And so I had two, and then something happened to one, melted or something, and the green one. It's really cute. Well, I got real serious about, I need more of this bowl.
Yeah.
And I knuckled down on it, looking online, looking at eBay, been looking at Goodwill for a long time, not finding it. I post online in our, like if anyone have one of these that they would sell me. Like, because I'm like, I need like five of them. That very night, the last remaining yellow bowl melted. Somebody put it on the burner. The very night that I'm like, I've got to multiply my Tupperware bowls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been looking for months for these things. So listeners, if you find the vintage fix and mix, or you have seven of them in your cupboard somewhere and you want to sell them to me, you know, now you know where the market is. So, but now I went and I actually bought two new Tupperware bowls. And they are not as great, but they are. I think I can come to terms with them.
Good. I'm glad to hear
this. I felt like it was just going to be too hard to start collecting these from hither and thither in the world. Like, for, there's one thing about spending $30 on a plastic bowl. There's just something about that that doesn't feel quite like it. Like, I should be buying this for $2, not for $30. Right. But buying it new didn't feel that great either. But at least it feels better than buying one that's stained. Like, a stained plastic bowl for $30. I'm sorry, no.
No,
but the colors of the vintage ones are way better. They're like that jade green that's really cute, and then and like a buttery yellow. They're cute. I want more of those. But
that's really funny.
Yeah, hard times for me.
Well, look, we've been talking way too long. I'll recommend something another day because it's this is like way long.
Yeah. Well, I had to take a break.
Yeah, you did.
All right. Thank you for coming. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
New St. Andrews College thanks you for listening.